The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
You have downloaded the Wednesday edition and the 50th episode of Talk is Jericho. And that means you're about to hear part one of my celebratory anniversary episode with my conversation with Paul Heyman and Edge. Not separate, not one on the phone, one live, both of them in the studio, face to face. Well, in a hotel room, actually. CM Punk will talk about Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker's streak ending, plus just a lot of cool conversations between three friends who've known each other for years and years and years and years. We'll also hear what brought Paul E. back to the WWE. So many more questions answered, stories told. Paul Heyman, my special guest co-host Edge, are coming up after we talk about our tunes. I just downloaded the iTunes app on my iPhone. I've been checking out the Rock Hits section. It sounds fruit. Way better streaming quality than Pandora. Music sounds awesome. Awesome. Everything is awesome in my earbuds. Also, iTunes has stations for just about any music genre you can think of. Or you can check out the specialty playlists for those who aren't in the know. iTunes is a streaming music service that lets you listen to all your favorite mainstream music as well as new indie artists. It's seriously the best of both worlds if you're into Sammy Hagar, Van Halen. The iTunes stations are programmed by real people. Human hands and brains, people, pick up all the music. They choose it for you, so you don't have to worry about some computer algorithm choosing music that does not fit for you. If you sign up at rtunes.com right now and use the promo code Jericho50, that's Jericho50, you can get 3 months of unlimited skips and no ads. That's rtunes with a Z.com. How about this? You get another 3 months free when you download the iPhone or Android app for your device. So sign up at ourtunes.com, O-U-R-T-U-N-E-Z, or Z if you're from Canada.com. Use the promo code Jericho50, that's Jericho50, and get 3 months of unlimited skips and no ads. And then download the iPhone or Android app for your phone and get another 3 months as a thank you for free. That's OurTunes with a Z.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The show you love, yeah, is hosted by Chris Jericho. And guess what? The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Woo, it's a party! 50 episodes of Talk is Jericho. 50, man! Thanks to all you guys for joining me for so many great shows. What a blast I've had. We only started in December. It is now June, end of June, close to the end of June. And we've got 50 bad boys in the can already. If you're just getting hip to Talk is Jericho, go to podcastone.com and check out all the past episodes of Talk is Jericho. This one, number 50, I wanted to do something special, so I saved it for you. We recorded this back in April on the night of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Myself and Edge, who is my special co-host, interviewing Paul Heyman. It was so big. I wanted to save it for number 50. The three of us got together at a hotel room in New York City at the Hilton Times Square in New York City. Like I said, Adam and myself and my wise cousin Chad were in town for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I had arranged to interview Paul Heyman a few weeks prior, and I thought, what better way to get Paul on the show and to interview him than have Edge as my special co-host. So it was a really, really cool moment and a really, really cool show. So good that I split it up into two parts. And it's amazing because I don't know if Paul and Edge and myself ever had a conversation. I'm sure we had because we worked together for so many years. And Paul used to book SmackDown, where Edge and I were a big part of that about 10 years ago. But when you get together with old friends, yes, we were interviewing Paul Heyman, but then it becomes kind of a three-way dance, so to speak, a verbal three-way dance when we're all sharing experiences and memories of all the things that we had been through, all the things that we've done. One of my favorite episodes, and perfect for episode 50 of Talk is Jericho. Where do I even start? I mean, even with the cowbell, the cowbell started because I started recording in a studio in Tampa. Bubba the Love Sponge is the guy who runs the studio. Much thanks to Bubba for letting me record there. Happened to have a cowbell on the desk with a drumstick by it. And I just decided I was going to do the opening for Working for the Weekend, which, of course, is Loverboy's big hit. And every time you hear that cowbell with the snare drum happening, you know the party's about to begin. You heard it already, but it's... You know, you hear that 1, 2, 3 snare drum hit, you just know it's a good time and a party shall begin. So that's kind of where the whole cowbell thing started. Now everyone expects the cowbell. It's become a big part of Talk is Jericho. And so many other things, too. I mean, when I started the podcast, I wanted to do wrestling guests, obviously. It's what I know, as well as music guests. But I also didn't want to have any rules on who I wanted to have on the show. I've had actors, musicians, wrestlers, ghost hunters, reality show stars, DJs, just everybody in between, hockey players. And I love the diversity of Talk is Jericho. I know sometimes I get some heat from fans that want to hear nothing but, let's say, wrestling guests, or that want to hear nothing but musical guests. But you're going to hear it all. To me, this is like a talk show. It's like The Tonight Show. I'm your host. If I have somebody on my show, you have to trust me that you're going to like them. And obviously, people have their favorites. But some of these episodes have done amazing, amazing ratings. That are kind of outside the box, which is really cool. And you're going to get so many more amazing, versatile guests. I've got, I think, 20 shows in the can, and I got a lot of ideas upcoming of people that I'm going to have on the show. I've just been really enjoying it. Once again, I know there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of podcasts to listen to, and you guys have been super, super rad by coming to listen to my show. What were your favorite episodes of Talk is Jericho? Hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and let me know who came on the show that you really dug, that were one of your favorites. I mean, if I had to go through the list, I'm just kind of pulled them all up now. I mean, all of the shows I enjoyed in different ways or another. I mean, obviously Steve Austin, the very first guest I ever had, and the guy who basically gave me the idea to do this show, hooked me up with Podcast One and said, you know, man, you'd be perfect at doing this. You got to get into it. Worst Steve Austin imitation ever. But Steve not only helped me get a show, kind of took me under his wing for a little while and helped me organize things. And then he was my first guest, and couldn't have been easier as a guest or better as a guest. But it was funny because when I called him, he was just in a real sour mood. He's like, yep. I'm like, hey, man, you ready to do this? Yep. Are you okay? Yep. All right. And then I'm like, hey, Steve. Hey, Chris, well, congratulations on having your podcast. And, you know, it was a really cool first guest. And I'm sure I'm a million times better as a host than I was then. At least I hope so. And much thanks to Steve. Much credit to Steve. If you haven't heard his podcast or if you haven't listened, he's got two every week as well. Great, great shows. The Steve Austin Show and Steve Austin Unleashed. So I can't thank him enough for being just a tremendous guest and kind of a mentor. I think another great guest that I had, Ted Irvin, my dad. That was one of the reasons that I had the podcast. He was one of the first ideas that I had for a guest. And actually, before I had him on, I guess about a month and a half before, he actually had a heart attack, a mild heart attack a few days before my show. And he was like, oh, I can't do your show. And I was like, listen, if you wanted to cancel being a guest on my show, you could have just told me. You didn't have to go have a heart attack to do so. So, you know, I was really glad to get him on the show, not just once, but twice now. And I'm going to have him on again because it's something I'll always be able to cherish, even long after he's gone or long after I'm gone. That show will be up and running and my kids will be able to listen to it and their grandkids will be able to listen to it. I think it's a pretty cool thing to be able to say you did. Another reason why I love having Ash on, my son, Ash the Fish Expert. And that all started once again one day when we were looking at a picture of the Loch Ness Monster, some kind of a sonar that was taken where it was supposed to be the Loch Ness Monster. And he said, you know, don't get your hopes up, Dad. It's a sturgeon. And I was like, why? And he started giving me all these reasons. And I said, stop. Come with me. Took him into the studio here and cranked it up. And we had him on a couple times. And we'll have him on again. Chavo Guerrero, my first in-studio guest. And one of my favorite guests, not just for Wrestling Stories, but obviously the tight-knit family that we had with Chavo, myself, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, and Chris Benoit. Eddie and Chris no longer with us. Chavo, you know, basically spent the last few hours of both those guys' lives, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, last few days at least. And it was very emotional to have Chavo on. And, you know, another cool thing I love about this show is it gives me a chance to reconnect with some of my long lost friends. I hadn't seen Chavo in years and realized, like, why have we not been talking? Why have we not been hanging out? We've been through too much together. Great, great guest, and one of my favorite episodes, actually two of my favorite episodes. If you haven't heard the Chavo Guerrero ones, whether you're a wrestling fan or not, go check it out. Eli Roth was a great guest. He showed up still in his tuxedo from the Oscars the night before. He was late because he got drunk and passed out after Madonna's Oscar party. And then told some great stories about all of his experiences as an actor, as a director, being up in the Amazon jungle filming his new movie, The Green Inferno. Once again, haven't heard Eli, go check it out. Bully Ray, really enjoyed him. Another perfect example of a guy I hadn't seen in a while that we reconnected doing the podcast. Both those shows were excellent because the best guests, I mean, I think are your friends when you have things to talk about and things to go back on. You know, Chavo was like that. Eli, Bully, Steve, obviously my dad. William Shatner, though, who I'd never met. I met him briefly at a Comic-Con that I did at the Comic-Con with the sole purpose of trying to get Shatner nailed down for an interview. If I had to pick one that was my absolute favorite episode, it could be the William Shatner show because, you know, had a lot of huge guests in music and in wrestling, but as far as a pure A-list worldwide celebrity that everyone knows his name, he doesn't get much bigger than William Shatner. And the stories he told and just his demeanor, very funny, just a great guy, showed up by himself, no handlers, no PR person, you know, no entourage. And I just, man, I mean, when I'm 83, I'm going to be doing people's podcasts and showing up on my own, whether they want me to or not. I'm just going to show up there. Daniel Bryan, another great guest. I had him on right before he had his neck injury, basically like literally a week beforehand. And I had no intentions of having him on for two shows because I know, you know, WWE superstars are busy. He was the world champion at the time before he was stripped. And we talked for like 80 minutes. It got to about the 40-minute point and I realized that we were still rolling and he had no indication that he wanted to stop. And we ended up doing about 80 minutes together, which is perfect for two shows. So Daniel Bryan, once again, excellent guest. And I'm sure when he comes back from his injury, he's going to be bigger and better than ever. If you don't believe that, you're wrong. If you do believe it, the answer is yes, yes, yes. Bruce Kulick from Kiss. I've known Bruce for a while, but when he came in there, man, he told so many great stories about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, about Kiss. You know, Kiss, such a huge entity, a huge band for so many years. And Bruce told amazing, amazing stories that even I, as a huge Kiss fanatic, had never heard. And even if you aren't a huge Kiss fan, just about show business and the way things are done at such a huge level. Bruce, like I said, standout guest for me. And actually, Drew McIntyre from last week, I think he did a tremendous job. And he was a guy that a lot of people probably, you know, they wouldn't have maybe listened to his show or thought, oh, why would you have him on? There's so many other people that I wanted to have on. But when he was released by the WWE, he was the, you know, I said, I have to have him on my show now because I know how intelligent he is. I know how smart he is. And talk about an emotional interview, a tell it like it is, no BS interview. Couldn't have done a better job. And it was, I think, a great platform to Drew to kind of let people know that he's coming, he's out there, and he's coming for you. And I think he's going to be a big guy to look forward to in the future. So those are just some of my favorite guests and going through the list. All my shows have been favorites. I've enjoyed them all. All the guests I've had on because I wanted to have them on because I thought they were interesting people. Most polarizing guest, Snooki, who was great on my show, told amazing stories about WrestleMania. And I loved Jersey Shore, too. It was a favorite show of mine. A lot of people are like, why would you have Snooki on the show? And why would you do that? And I do it because it's my show. And don't ever second guess yourself or question yourself. This is my show. I choose who I want to have on the show. You choose whether you want to listen or not. My fans who get it know that every show I do is good. You know, there might be some guests you like better than others, but I don't have uninteresting people on, and I don't have people on that I don't think I can have good interviews with. And while some shows and guests have been better than others, every single person that's been on this show has been because I've chosen them. Every voice, every from Egypt to Pinche Ghost, Gordy Canuck, Oates' Mustache, all these great guests that I've had on and will continue to have on once again because it's funny for me and I hope you guys find it the same way. So thank you so much for listening for the last 50 episodes. Here's to 5,000 more. I have no intention of stopping. I love doing this for you for free for twice a week. Go check out my amazing sponsors. If you haven't, it's one of the reasons why we get to do this for free. And thanks for everybody who's come to see Fozzy for the last few months. Huge, huge show in El Paso last week, which was first time we ever played there. Gosh, there must have been 9,000-10,000 people in the middle of the street to see us. Amazing reactions. And a big show coming up at the Whiskey A Go-Go, July 24th in Hollywood, the famous Whiskey A Go-Go. We played there a few years ago. Come check us out if you live in the Southern California area. It's the record release party. Do You Want to Start a War? Comes out July 22nd. You can pre-order it on Amazon. If you haven't heard Lights Go Out or One Crazed Anarchist, then you haven't been listening to this podcast because I've been shamelessly been playing them. I will continue to do so because, once again, it's my show. Actually, it's our show, and thanks to all of you for being a part of it, and I look forward to a long, long relationship for a long time to come. All right, before we get into things with Paul Heyman and Edge, Paul Heyman, Edge, and Chris Jericho. What a tres amigos that is. Tres gusanos is more like it. Three worms. Before I get to tres gusanos, my kids and my three dogs are anxiously waiting for the next BarkBox delivery. That box cannot come soon enough to my house. Jaws, Bella, Nibbles, my dogs go crazy when our monthly BarkBox arrives, and my kids love it too, Ash, Cheyenne, and Sierra. They love to help the dogs rip that box open to see what's inside. It's always a surprise. We never know exactly what's going to be in there, but we do know it's going to be high quality stuff you can't get at your local brand name pet store. Man, we get everything from all natural treats to toys to cool pet gadgets and leashes. We've also gotten a few pet hygiene products. Of course, the dogs love the treats and toys best. Who wouldn't? If I was a dog, I'd feel the same way. And we love the fact that BarkBox is dedicated to supporting the health and happiness of all dogs. Last year, BarkBox donated over $150,000 to shelters, rescues, and animal welfare organizations. This year, their goal is to donate $1 million to the pups. BarkBox gives 10% of their proceeds back to a growing network of doggy organizations. I'm telling you got to try this. Just go to BarkBox.com/Jericho to save 20% off your first subscription. Make your dogs and kids happy. It's fun for the whole family. That's BarkBox.com/Jericho. You can also take advantage of this great offer by going to PodcastOne.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. BarkBox, baby. Go check it out now. Your dogs and your kids and your family are begging you to do so.
Bill Goldberg here, and whether it be the NFL, whether it be the WCW or the WWE, I have met a myriad of interesting individuals. Spend an hour with me on Who's Next with Goldberg and listen to the likes of Tony Stewart, Terry Crews, Chris Daughtry, Sean Merriman, Clint Black, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and many more. Go to PodcastOne.com, PodcastOne.com.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, here we are in the Hilton Times Square, and I got to give them props because they let us stay in this room till 4. And I've got a star-studded panel with Paul Heyman is here, a great friend for many years, and Edge, one of the best guests I've had so far.
I was just strolling through Times Square. Yeah. I was turning tricks. Thought I'd show up.
Nice. And actually,
and I was the trick. I was the customer. I was the John.
But yeah, man. I mean, we wanted to work this out because we're here in New York City. Edge came to see us, and I thought, man, if I can get Paul Heyman, like this would be the best day ever. And you came all the way across the city to do this for me. I really appreciate that, man. Well,
the pleasure's all mine.
It's good to see you. I mean, what a lot of crazy stuff has been going on over the last few weeks. Might as well, like, the biggest one of all was WrestleMania, and the fact that the streak was broken by your protege, Brock Lesnar. And, I mean, it kind of shocked everybody. I think fans are still, like, people are crying. Like, I got a lot of feedback of people who are like, this shouldn't have happened, and I can't believe it happened. And, I mean, how did it feel for you to be out there in pure silence in front of 70,000 people?
It's the old story of Bruno Sammartino being pinned in Madison Square Garden by Ivan Koloff, that you could hear a pin drop when it happened because everybody was in such shock. Right. Brock actually wondered if he had lost his hearing, which is the same story that Sammartino tells. That, you know, if you hear, you know, oh, let me tell you, when I lost the title to Koloff, I thought I'd gone deaf for a moment, you know. And I don't know why Sammartino sounds Jewish when I imitate him, but,
yeah, right.
But you know, listen, he's converted. Yeah. Rabbi Bruno Sammartino Berg.
You know, when I lost my hearing in the Madison Square Garden.
Oy vej, man, let me tell you. But Brock, when I got to Brock, he was like, what's going on? And I said, they're in shock. And he says, I'm in shock too. And it was the reaction that in hindsight you would expect, but looking at it in advance, you really can't determine how that audience would react, because it is such a shocking moment, because you're so preconditioned to one, two, oh! Mm-hmm. Oh, he was so close. He was an eighth of a second away from the streak ending. And, you know, it's the old thing of anything can happen in WWE, mm-hmm. and always expect the unexpected. But in that match, that is the one constant. The one constant in WWE, the one constant in WrestleMania is you're not going to get surprised in the Undertaker's match. And you're going to believe during the match that maybe this is, here's the pinfall, but deep in your heart, mm-hmm. you're just along for the ride, and the audience is just playing the role, because their role is to go one, two, oh, it was so close. Mm-hmm. They never truly believed that streak was going to end.
Yeah, I found that with the buildup of the match, it wasn't super like, oh my God, there's jeopardy. It just seemed like business as usual. And like you said, it was going to be number 22 and the streak would end. And I don't think, or the streak would continue. I don't think anybody expected that. And I remember in 88 when Hogan lost the title with to Andre the Giant with the famous double referees. And when that happened, like, no one could believe it. Like, Hogan was the champion for 4 years. You can't have this end, but it did. And that's one thing I thought was real. I think I was really shocked at first, but it was a real genius decision from, you know, whether Taker made it. I'm sure, I mean, just Taker had something to do with it, but Vince's decision, because nobody expected it. And it really, it heated up Brock huge.
Huge. It was a victory that Brock truly needed too, because it once again now separates him from everybody else. He's again the outsider. He's again the UFC guy. He's again the guy that doesn't truly belong. I can sit there on television and quote his credentials, the NCAA Division I heavyweight champion, the UFC heavyweight champion, the WWE heavyweight champion. No man's ever held two of the three, let alone all three. Mm-hmm. But it's all hype and hyperbole, unless you give them backup and credence to what I'm saying. So when he's the one guy in 20-some-odd years that has beaten Undertaker at WrestleMania, and again, you know, it's all the stuff that I was saying before WrestleMania. I mean, take a look at – now, you're undefeated at WrestleMania too, aren't you?
I was until Taker.
Until Taker, right. But you went 11, right?
I think it was seven.
Okay, so
but I mean, yeah, we're sitting with a guy, and we'll get into this. You actually were one of the victims of the streak, and also one of the earliest matches that was a real show stealer, because there was a string that Taker had of about six manias in a row, five or six, where they were show stealing matches, and you were. I think you mentioned Batista, but maybe yours was the first that really stole the show.
Well, thank you.
I mean, but you look at. You look at Shawn Michaels, who's Mr. WrestleMania. He never got past two in a row. Triple H, he never got past three in a row. Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, as big a star as I've ever experienced in this generation, especially, he never got the five. John Cena never got, you know, and certainly, I mean, the longest run on top I've ever seen, including San Martino, has been John Cena. The longest consecutive run, it's an amazing run for Cena.
I think I was in 12 WrestleManias and won like three of them, so I have a really bad record.
That's not great. It's not.
And yet, here's Taker. And whatever anybody wants to say about sports entertainment and how the winners and the losers occur, it's still 21 consecutive victories at WrestleMania. You know, it's even the behind the scenes aspect of that is an amazing number. So when Brock is the one to beat that streak, and you take into consideration, well, he was the NCAA Division I heavyweight champion. He was the UFC heavyweight champion. He was the youngest WWE champion at that time. Now, all of a sudden, it all comes together. And, you know, and of course, you have the physical appearance of Brock Lesnar. So I think it has not only revitalized the mystique of Brock Lesnar, it has turned Brock back into a mega attraction that was a mystique, I think, had been taken away
Absolutely.
From him.
That's what I was going to talk about, because armchair quarterback, he shouldn't have lost to Cena. He shouldn't have lost to Hunter. He should have destroyed everyone. And that's part of the problem nowadays, is there's no plan going forward. There's no, if you have a 2-year plan and you know this is going to happen, great. You can book accordingly, but it's so spur of the moment now. And I think that's, you know, so it had great impact. But imagine the impact it could have had if he went through all of those guys.
Yeah, because you're right. Because he was kind of I'm not going to say he was cold, but he was almost taken for granted. The mystique of Brock Lesnar, like you said, had almost been taken for granted, and that's why I think most people just expected that Taker was going to win, and that was the end of it. And we move on to next year, and Roman Reigns will get his shot, or Bray Wyatt, or some new guy. To me, when you really think about it, Brock is the only guy that should have beaten that streak. Well, he's a part-time guy. He doesn't love wrestling. That's what fans are saying. But if you're looking from a guy with the street cred, the size, everything.
The mouthpiece.
Seriously. I mean, obviously.
Well, thank you.
A guy, you know, and like, okay, let's say Roman Reigns would have won, for example. That's a wrestling win. People know it's not real. Brock is a guy that legitimately could beat Undertaker in a street fight, you know, and has the right guy to emphasize that. So I think that when you look at it, Brock was the only guy that was believable in ending the streak and the best guy that you can use. And like you said, is shot up to being the top heel in the company now.
Yes. Well, I concur.
And and the mainstream press that you can get from that.
Yeah. And we got a bunch of it. I mean, it was a significant headline. You know, and not only here in the United States, it was a significant headline on a global basis. And again, not just in people that were covering WrestleMania, but then the MMA boards got a hold of it, and the MMA websites and the sports media got a hold of it. It became a legitimate mainstream news story.
Yeah, it did. And because of now, let me ask you a question, Edge, or I'm probably going to call you Adam anyway. So, what was it? Tell us about like the pressure or the, like when you're in WrestleMania against Taker working for the streak, did it seem like, I mean, that will always seem like the main event of the show every year, no matter what, where you were on the card or who else was on the card. Was there a lot of pressure on you, to know that you're taking on Taker in a, you know, a match for the streak?
There is because I always assumed, and I think rightfully so, that it's the most important match on the show. You know, whether it's the WWE Championship, the World Championship, it doesn't matter. The streak to me was the one that just had the most involved with it. We had the World Heavyweight Championship involved that year, so that added an even extra element to it. And that was the year with Shawn and Rick. So I purposely didn't watch their match because I knew what it was going to be. And I was like, okay, I don't want that to color anything that we're doing. I want to go into this. This is our own thing. You know, that it's its own thing. But I felt really good about it. I like pressure, and we'd only wrestled one singles match before that, but we knew we were in the same pocket. And I just, you know, tried to do that whole chess match thing of countering everything he has to try and get people to believe that, hey, this could end. And that, I think, is the biggest challenge, is actually having the people believe that and not just go along for the ride and play their part. And so, but it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. You know, when I got introduced second, but just to come down that aisle and see him in that corner, it's just, it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, we are in this. Like, this is happening.
It carries more historical significance than any other match on the card, because Daniel Bryan will win and lose the WWE title how many times in his career? And I mean, deservedly so as well, you know, and everybody else that's on the show is going to look for that WrestleMania moment, look for the moment that lives on the video clips for the next 25, 50, 100 years. But had Taker defended the streak, it still would have had huge historical significance, because when you look back, you have to go through who were involved in the 22-0. Mm-hmm. Taker losing the streak to Brock Lesnar, defeating The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That's Hogan slamming Andre and dropping the leg for the 1-2-3. It, you know, again, a lot of what I said before the actual match was so real oriented, so shoot based. You know, and I said it. I didn't think Taker losing would affect the significance of those first 21 victories. Mm-hmm. And it would be the most famous match. It would be the most famous moment in WrestleMania since Hogan and Andre.
It's something that can only happen once.
Certainly in our generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, if someone were to start today, we got 20 some odd years before they're going to, you know, get to that stage where it's 21. Mm-hmm. I mean, my God. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's and who today is of the age that they could start that? Bray Wyatt just lost. Mm. So he's not going to go undefeated at WrestleMania.
That's right. Reigns, like, you know, or someone that we haven't seen yet.
The Shield won.
But does that count? Were all of Taker's matches single matches?
I think there was a handicap match.
Yeah, maybe one handicap match, right. But I mean, so basically you say someone would have to start next year and go for 21 years. We might not even be here when that happened.
Right. So, I mean, you'd have to find a 25-year-old to start.
Yeah. And then the intangibles, injuries, you know, can they adapt? Will they adapt? You know, all of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
That Taker did do, which adds so much to what the streak was.
Now, you know, the rumor is that Taker had a concussion during the match. Is that true? Did he get his bell rung during the match?
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, he was. I mean, he collapsed 5 seconds after walking through, you know,
Vince went with him to the hospital.
Yes. Oh, that was when I said that on television. That was that's 100% a true story.
And think about that, the respect that Vince has for The Undertaker to leave the main event of his biggest show of the year on the 30th anniversary to go to the you know, hospital with Taker. Wow.
Taker came through the curtain. He didn't get to the second curtain, which was through Gorilla, and he collapsed. And Vince got the word Taker's down, and Vince left the headsets and went to Taker, and he was not going to leave Taker's side. Mm-hmm. It was just Taker had no idea where he was. He was really, really.
Do you think that Undertaker is Vince McMahon's greatest creation, as far as gimmick wise? It would have to be. Like, to me, I can't think of maybe Hulk Hogan, if you're considering Hulk Hogan as a gimmick, but Hulk was Hulk before he got into the WWE. Taker became Undertaker when he started with. I can't think of a.
I think as a pure, you know, it happened in the WWF. Yeah he's got to be.
I mean, the character certainly had the most longevity and certainly had the most longevity on top. And he's been on top since the day he started, which was Survivor Series 1990. I mean, he started 24 years ago. Mm-hmm. And again, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, he's never been just a middle of the road act. Mm-hmm. He's been a very carefully produced, very carefully presented, very carefully marketed performer for 24 years. I don't know who else has had that run. Hogan didn't have that run.
No, and Hogan was created, you know, obviously was you know, streamlined by Vince, but he was working as Hulk Hogan for Vern and correct. For Vince's dad, you know, correct. Early on. But another thing I wanted to talk about was just how tough Taker is, you know, to be able to work a whole match with a concussion. The reason why I say this is, like, we all have a real connection with Taker. You worked with him at the streak, had a great program with him. You just were in the ring when he lost the streak. And I, the last world title Taker ever held and the last world title I ever held, I beat Taker for it in the Elimination Chamber. And as he was coming down to the ring for that match, the pyro went off in his face three times. I don't know what happened, but he got literally burned. His coat, his leather coat, was like looked like if you light styrofoam on fire. It was all crumpled up and weird, misshapen. The only thing that saved him was his hat protected his face. His hair protected him, but his whole chest, you know, he wears that singlet, was beet red. And it was white underneath. Now, he gets burned. He comes out on stage, and I was right there from my pod, and I could see a bird's eye view. He's walking down to the ring. Fire goes up, burns him. He goes to his left. Fire comes up, burns him. He goes to his right, and it burns him three times. And he runs to the pod and stands in the pod for 20 minutes, pouring water on himself as his flesh is burned. He had third-degree burns or second-degree burns, whatever the worst one is, maybe even first in some places, and then wrestles a match.
I know what my advice would have been from ringside.
What's that?
Chop him. I'm a heel.
You know, it's funny. I put him in the Walls of Jericho, and he stayed in it for a while, and he said that hurt him the most because his chest is pressed to the mat, pushing off. But I, after the match, I go backstage, and Vince and Taker are already in the trainer's room. And I remember Taker, you know, super calm. He's the Fonz, man. He's the coolest guy in the dressing room. He goes, I came in there, and he's like, Vince, I don't want an apology. I don't want an excuse. I'm just telling you, I don't ever want to see that guy again because if I do, I'm going to kill him. And you know I'm telling the truth. And Vince is like, yes, I do. And I'm not going to say the guy's name, but the pyro guy was never
seen
again.
Is he dead? He's never been seen again, but somewhere in a swamp in Texas, there's a pyro guy with a lot of bullet holes in him.
But apparently I heard he works for Iron Maiden now. I'm like, Steve, you better watch out, dude.
Look out, Bruce. Oh, you just named him.
No, Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. Oh. Yeah, don't go stand too close to the pyro.
Steve Harris from Iron Maiden was doing pyro for WWE?
And he's never been seen?
What's Bruce Dickinson going to say about this?
We're here with Paul Heyman and Edge, and we're going to get into what brought Paul back to the WWE and how he became Brock Lesnar's manager. But first, you got to get in on this huge contest at DraftKings.com. It's their biggest fantasy baseball contest of the season. They're awarding over $3 million in cash prizes, with $1 million for first place alone. That's insane. DraftKings.com is fun. It's easy. It's instant cash every day. That's why it's America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. And check this out. You can score free entry. Just enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for your shot at hundreds, thousands, even $1 million, man. So go to DraftKings.com now and enter Y2J for your free entry. That's DraftKings.com and use the promo code Y2J and do it right now.
Hey, everybody, it's Jim Ross, and I invite you to download the Ross Report absolutely free. If you want to hear from one of the smartest guys in the entire wrestling business, Lance Storm. The Canadian went from being one of the best inside the sports circle to being the best trainer of new talent today. Lance is so well-spoken, and he's sharing his knowledge right here on the Ross Report at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
We're here at Hilton Times Square in New York City. Chad Nathan, front office manager. Great guy. Let us keep this room for a couple extra hours. We're talking to Paul Heyman. We've got Edge here as my co-host today.
Yeah, Chad.
Doing a great job. We got wise cousin Chad taking notes in the corner. Very smart. He's an engineer. He knows about oil and stuff. But let's talk about Paul. I mean, you know, we've talked about the streak, and it's obviously a hot topic. But a big part of that is the work that you've done to get Brock Lesnar over and to be the mouthpiece. You did it for Punk as well, and we can talk about Punk in a bit. But how has this been since your return to the WWE, which has only been maybe 2 years
now? 2 years, back 2 years.
What brought you back into the business, and how are you enjoying it since you've returned?
It's real easy for me now because I'm not on the writing team. Mm-hmm. And so I have none of that Icarus flying too close to the sun relationship. Good, with
good, good Maiden reference, since we were just talking about Iron Maiden.
You know, I mean, but that was always a story of my relationship with Vince. It was always, you know, I was flying too close to the sun. And then boom, my wings would melt, you know. So now the only thing I really, you know, get into discussions about it are the segments that I'm involved in. So mm-hmm. It makes my job much, much easier because I can concentrate on what I'm doing. I could spend a whole week obsessing about what we're going to do on Monday. Mm-hmm. So by the time I get there, he knows that I've spent a whole week thinking about this. So what I'm bringing to the table are suggestions that it doesn't matter about the rest of the show. Okay, here you go. I understand what you're trying to sell here. Let me help you sell mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And because we're not around each other so many days a week, he's probably happy to see me on a Monday. Because it's only on a Monday. I came back simply. It was a very funny thing. And I don't say this disparagingly about Brock, because they put a microphone in Brock's hands and he threatened never to mm-hmm. let them live
it. He had
the
Mike Tyson syndrome. He's a very quiet voice, not very tough sounding.
He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't like to do it.
He hates people.
But he does hate people.
I know.
I traveled with him. He does.
Yeah, I know.
But it adds so much more, him just standing there looking like, you know, a Caucasian Incredible Hulk and without the purple pants.
Yeah.
And you talk. It adds that aura of mystique.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great personal relationship as well. Because, I mean, why wouldn't a Midwest Aryan like Brock Lesnar get along with a smart-ass New York Jew boy like me? You know, we're a perfect match.
And one thing, Brock actually moved to Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
No one has ever done
Nobody moves there.
People can't. Why is Cousin Chad sitting in the corner from Yorkton, Saskatchewan? Would you ever move to Yorkton? You couldn't wait to get out of there. They didn't. So Brock actually lives. He moved to a farm in Saskatchewan to get away from people. No one in the world has ever moved to Saskatchewan.
Yeah,
we love our fans in Saskatchewan.
You know, he has this place in northern Minnesota. You know, that's like, you know, it's off two dirt roads, and it's like the Lesnar family compound, and that wasn't private enough for him. So he also found this farm, another town you're familiar with, not too far outside of Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
So he's up in Winnipeg. It's a huge farm. He's totally isolated in
kind of in Brandon, I think it is.
Wow. And he has he doesn't have any cell service, mm-hmm. and he has a landline that is literally a mile and a half down the driveway from his house. When you have and when you're a mile and a half on the same driveway, imagine the size of the spread. So literally he says, well, okay, call me at exactly 1 o'clock Manitoba time, because I'll drive to the phone to take your call. Okay. So
it's like two cans and a string.
Yeah, that's right.
So this wasn't private enough for Brock, because there were people living within 15 minutes of me. So he moved to Saskatchewan because it's a little more isolated, I guess. And I guess just, you know, he wanted some sort of summer weather, or Antarctica was probably where he was looking for his next real estate purchase. You know, that's Brock.
Right.
He doesn't like people.
So they put the microphone in his hand. You know it's not working.
Right, right. He went back and, you know, when he went back, he calls me up and he says, listen, I'm telling you straight up, I'm cutting a deal with these guys. You want to be part of it? And I had already been out almost 5.5 years, and I really had no desire to go back. I had my fill. I had started doing a lot of viral stuff involving the video games and UFC, and I have my own agency here in New York City, and I got spoiled. I was home with my kids every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really enjoyed that time at home. So I said, you know, Brock, I'm going to take a pass on this one. You know, I just don't feel it. They're not going to want me. I'm not going to want them. We're not going to get along. Mm-hmm. So Brock goes back, and then he does that 18-minute segment with John Laurinaitis on the microphone.
Mm.
And
because he was originally, Laurinaitis was his mouthpiece, right?
Right, and Brock comes back into Gorilla.
Sorry, I have to laugh at that.
There's nothing wrong with John Laurinaitis being somebody's mouthpiece. I don't know why you're laughing. I always thought we were tight edge. I've been an ally of yours.
That got a belly laugh.
Giddy edge.
Edge
is tired today.
Yeah.
So if you watch the tape, Brock goes back to Gorilla with the microphone in his hand because he was so mad he didn't put it down. And he goes back into Gorilla, and as legend would have it, and I've heard this from both parties, Vince says, "That wasn't exactly what we were looking for." And Brock puts the mic down and right in front of Vince and says, "I don't think you should ever put a microphone in my hand again." And Vince says, "Well, what the hell are we going to do?" And Brock says, "Call Heyman. That's what he does. He's my Jew." And walks out of Gorilla. So within that week, I had agreed to go and do a voiceover. I did the Punk DVD. I did the Austin DVD first. Mm-hmm. And then I did the Punk DVD. And then I was doing a voiceover for the commercial for ECW Unreleased Matches. Mm-hmm. And I had fallen into this pattern of doing these favors, these one-offs. As long as I could tape them in the studio on Monday or Tuesday, because no one's ever around.
You wouldn't have to see Vince.
Wouldn't have to see anybody. Hey, I had heat with everybody. It wasn't just Vince. I couldn't imagine anybody would be happy to see me walking in the doors. So as long as I can go on a Monday or Tuesday, I'm in, I'm out, I'm stealth.
Right.
I get the check in the mail. I'm a happy camper.
Yeah.
So they call me, and Brock buzzes me. He says, "Hey, listen, just so you know, I mentioned your name to Vince." And I was like, okay. After seeing that promo, I kind of understand why. And I still wasn't really interested. But I was supposed to go the next day to do the voiceover.
Were you still watching the product at the time?
100%.
Okay.
How could I not?
Right.
Of course. Right. And not only just because he was on, I never stopped watching it. Mm. I've always enjoyed it. I probably enjoyed it more once I was gone than when I was embedded in it because I'd become so tired of it and so burned out. It became such a personal fight between me and Vince. I wasn't enjoying it anymore. So once I was gone, I could enjoy it again. And it became a real hot button issue. Once CM Punk did the whole Paul Heyman guy shtick, with that
the pipe bomb promo. That was his famous pipe bomb promo.
Right. Once he did that, I became relevant in that world again. Mm-hmm. You know, it became, you know, listen, anybody can walk down the street. If you were on TV in the 1970s, someone's bound to recognize you. Hey, man, I remember you on TV, you know. But I wasn't relevant anymore. I was an old guy. I remember you.
Right, you weren't current.
Absolutely not. And then CM Punk does the Paul Heyman guy routine, and all of a sudden I'm relevant again. You know, when are you coming back? Mm-hmm. Hey, come on. That leads to something. Hey, you're Paul Heyman, and he's a Paul Heyman guy. So I became a relevant topic again. And in an age of social media, it's just something that never died. So they called me on Tuesday morning and said, "We're having production problems. Could you tape this this voiceover on Thursday?" Now, you guys know this as well as I do. They don't have production problems. There's no such thing as a production problem in that studio. If they did have a production problem, everyone would get fired. Everything would be thrown out, and they would airlift a new studio over to the studio, and they would be ready for you that afternoon. These guys are on top of their game, state of the art. So I knew right there something was up. And lo and behold, once I got there, there was a message, "Hey, could you come by the tower and take the service entrance so nobody sees you?" You know, and the pitch was.
And you're going to meet with Vince?
No, I didn't see Vince, so I walked into Gorilla the night I returned.
So who did you see?
Triple H.
Okay.
I saw Triple H.
And the pitch was,
you know, WrestleMania is in New Jersey next year. It's right across the bridge from your house. Not that I'm suggesting that you walk or that you that you drive yourself, but, you know, you and Brock have this really good relationship, and he's only here for SummerSlam and WrestleMania. Hey, listen, it's two pay-per-views. Do a couple of TVs walking in. Do a couple TVs walking into Mania. Do Mania right here in your hometown. And you guys are really good together. Well, how'd you like to work with it? You know, and boy, it was a very convincing pitch. Mm-hmm. So I took it. And, of course, you know, once they know they have access to you, the most PG way I can say this is a hard pee-pee has no conscience. So, you know, oh, we got Heyman? Put him on TV next week.
Yeah.
So instead of 4 weeks into SummerSlam, I'm back on TV in May. You know, we'll extend this thing, you know. And so,
and now you're coming on to represent Brock when he's not even there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And it worked. And I really, the truth is, You know, they kept me hidden all day, as they're prone to do.
Right, because you came back as with Punk, not with Brock.
No, I came back with Brock.
Okay,
I came back actually without Brock. I came back to announce Brock had quit.
Gotcha.
So we're in Greensboro, and they fly me into Raleigh, so that nobody sees me in the airport. I mean, I was totally nobody knew. I wasn't on Kevin Dunn. When Kevin Dunn doesn't know, man, that's and probably they didn't tell Kevin Dunn because he probably would have bitched about it. Don't bring that fucker back. Oh, fucking Heyman, you know. Which is good. I say pee-pee because I want to be. Oh my God. I mean, nobody knew. Vince knew. Stephanie knew. Triple H knew. I knew Brock knew.
I always like that. A couple times I've done that, kind of being hidden away. I mean, you came back at the Rumble hidden away. It's always kind of fun, right? Like you're like a secret, right?
So I was, and they told Punk an hour before the broadcast and sent him out to the bus to see me so that he could tweet it.
That's right. It's just a secret or whatever. Yeah, because
he was the first one to hit 1 million followers, and they wanted in on that social media action. So they snuck me in, and then Punk tweeted it. Literally during the commercial break that they're sneaking me into Gorilla. Mm-hmm. So when I got into Gorilla and literally they're playing the package of Brock breaking Triple H's arm, I just walk over to the curtain and I'm just waiting to hear go. And I'm hearing, you got to go say hi to Vince. And I'm thinking, oh, let me say hi to him after I do the promo, you know, because who knows, you know, I mean, I don't know what his feeling is, you know, he's just, God, we'll just tolerate him for a couple days, you know. So, okay, so I start going to him, and he comes around the thing, he goes, give me a huggy, you know, I'm like, oh, God, this one's going to hurt, you know, because when he hasn't seen you in a while. He squeezes you. He's so strong.
Still strong as an ox.
And I'm such a puss, you know? And he just goes, ah, you know? And he squeezes me with my feet off the ground. He goes, God damn it, it's good to see you. You know, and I'm thinking, no, it's not. You know, you're not happy to see me, and you're hurting me, you know? And I said, you're hurting me, you know? I have to concentrate on my promo. Ah, ha, 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 you know? And he, you know, puts me down, thank God, and he, you know, slaps me on the back, and man, that hurt too, you know. And I'm trying not to.
He knew it.
Oh, it was very much on purpose, and thank God it wasn't Stephanie hitting me because her slaps hurt more.
Worst slap in the business.
Oh, so I just went out and did my promo, you know, and I come back and he goes, "See you next week." I was like, "Oh God, this is going to become a weekly gig," you know. I just thought I was announcing that he's quitting. We come back before SummerSlam. What happened with Punk was we did SummerSlam, and I wasn't supposed to come back until Brock came back 4 weeks before Mania. Mm-hmm. I figured they'd tag me in probably in January just to start talking about him. But I was gone 2 days, and they called and they said, I want to put you with somebody else too. And I wasn't interested. Mm. I was like, nah, you know what? I don't want to water this thing down. I don't want to overstay my welcome. I'm only here, you know, because you guys wanted Brock to have a mouthpiece, and we're really good together, and it's a really good chemistry, and I don't see anybody that I can work with.
It's always the danger, too. Something works, and then it does get watered down. Like a TLC works, now there's a TLC pay-per-view, it slowly loses its effect, or it can.
Hell in the Cell.
Right. It's a very, very, very tough tightrope to walk. And I also didn't see anybody that I would have that kind of chemistry with. Or have a totally different chemistry with and can actually play a different character than I do with Brock. Mm-hmm. And literally the name was whispered. You know, it was just like, what about CM Punk? Man, I'll see you in Chicago. You got it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I didn't even have to think about that answer. It was like, wow, because number one, we have a personal relationship. Mm-hmm. Platonic, I assure you, but it's a personal relationship. Number two, we had worked so well together in OVW in putting together.
Well, you were one of the guys that was his first, you know, you pushed for him and let the office know how good he was. Because at first he had a lot of heat for having his own opinion and having confidence like I had and like you had and like all of us did that ever made it there.
Well, I was told to fire him.
Wow.
Oh,
why?
Yeah. Because they didn't want him. I was told finish him up.
Because he didn't look right or didn't like his work?
They didn't like him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was an OVW, and I used to get memos. By the way, finish up Punk, and, you know, he'll get his two-week notice once you finish him up.
Is that memos from Triple H or Vince? Or
no, it wasn't that
just
high
the up power, like Laurinaitis or whoever.
Yeah. That office at that time.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes, you know, just from, you know, office managers or secretaries. By the way, there was a meeting and this person wants you to give Punk his notice, finish him up, you know. And
Jan, the makeup girl, sending you a memo.
I mean, it was like how Austin got fired, you know, yeah. by Bischoff on an answering machine.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, and the first message was from Janie Engel to call in to get fired, yeah. you know. Yeah. So I wouldn't fire him. I said, that's not my job. My job is to build talent, not to take talent down. You guys give him his notice first, and then I'll wrap him up on TV. And no, you do it. No, you do it. You know, it was the most ridiculous, you know, game of not me, you. Oh, no, not me, you.
Yeah, yeah.
That I've ever played. But, I mean, we really had a great working relationship. We had really great chemistry. I understood his character. I knew how to get stuff out of him. It was just one of those mm-hmm. things that clicked. So having the chance to work with him, and here he was the WWE champion at the time, and trying to establish himself as a top guy and as the and as a heel too, mm-hmm. I just figured, man, we could really play with each other and just wing it half mm-hmm. the time, you know, which is what we ended up doing. So then I ended up starting in Chicago, which was the week after Brock left, you know, took his hiatus. I got put with Punk, and we were off to the races with that too.
Well, and it's interesting too because you got two guys that can talk on the mic. Usually, it's the instance of Brock where it's like, well, we'll use Paul. Paul can get the message across, but you guys could both do it, so it makes for an interesting dynamic.
It's the classic Nick Bockwinkel, Bobby Heenan, where they're both yes. amazing talkers, and they've just made such a great duo.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, with Brock, I consider myself as my father. My father was a trial lawyer from the Bronx, mm-hmm. and that's legitimate about my old man. My father legitimately was a trial.
Richard Heyman. I remember all this. I remember your address. Remember your dad's name. It's crazy.
Tricky Dicky Dangerously. You know, and Shyster from the Bronx.
Yeah.
And I used to watch my father when I was a kid. I used to watch him perform in front of a jury. So I always consider myself. When I'm with Brock, I'm his lawyer. That's where I get the name the advocate, because my father always said, Your Honor, I'm only an advocate. I'm here to protect my client's interests, and that's how I play it with Brock. With Punk, here's a musical reference for you, and nobody listening to this is probably old enough to remember this. He's Morris Day, and I'm Jerome. I always thought they were the greatest duo.
Oh, we, oh, we, oh.
Yeah, you know?
Girl, I got to know you.
I was the biggest fan of Jerome because Morris Day on his own was pretty damn good. Yeah. But, man, when he had Jerome backing him up and just shaking out, Morris Day shakes his head, Jerome shakes his head, you know? Everything, you know, and everything that Morris Day would do, Jerome would compliment. You know, so and again, you guys can relate to it. Your audience is probably sitting going, this guy is old.
What are they talking about?
Who the hell is Jerome? Is it New Jack? New Jack was with Morris Day, probably stabbed Morris Day, you know? I mean, but it was, that's how I envisioned it. I was like, whatever Punk is going to do, mm-hmm. I'm just going to compliment what he did. I'm his backup. I'm
the garnish.
I'm the garnish. Exactly. Yeah. You know? It was a different role. Mm-hmm. And I liked it because it was a different role. It was a totally different character than I played with Brock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like you guys had a great relationship and, I'm talking about on the show, and then, it falls apart and then you guys kind of feed each other. How is it for you to get in the ring and actually, you're taking bumps, you're getting hit with kendo sticks, you're climbing cages? I mean, is that part of the deal that you signed up for?
No.
I saw you climb that cage, man. It's like an elephant trying to climb it. So there's not a lot of grace there. Well,
thank you. I've been trying to lose weight. And I've been getting you look like the penguin from Batman, but now I've ascended
upgraded to elephant.
Now I'm an elephant, you know? No, man, really, just to see a really fat, blubbery guy like you get to the, here's the funny thing about that Hell in a Cell match. I'm deathly afraid of heights.
I know you are.
Horrible.
I know you are.
Horrible. I don't even like, how some guys go into the ring and they'll climb the ropes to get the reaction. I don't even like climbing up to the first turnbuckle.
I truly, and this is where I got a sense of it, TLC 2 in Houston, you were calling it. You sounded legitimately afraid for us.
Yes.
You really did.
Yes.
You sounded like, I they shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you know you guys are up on those ladders, and you know, and you're all so fearless about it too, and
stupid probably would well, be.
You know who else is afraid of heights? Regal. We had a cage match once, and he did not. He stood on the top rope holding onto the cage, and I was like, "Climb!" He's like, "I don't want to climb. Oh. Just climb, so I can't climb."
Devon.
Really?
Devon Dudley, deathly afraid of heights. He's hanging there by the belt loop going, oh, no, come on, Jay. Don't kick me so hard, Jay. Don't kick me so hard for that big bump that he took.
Yeah.
He was screaming the entire time. It was hilarious. I was on the ground going, oh, man, this is going to be ugly.
So you're afraid of heights.
I'm deathly afraid of heights. And I'm a fearless man. Mm-hmm. But, man, when it comes to heights, forget about it. I can go on the observation deck of the Empire State Building, and I love the view, but please don't ask me to go towards the ledge.
Right. Yeah.
I just can't do it, you know? I don't mind being way up there, but, man, you know, if you watch the Hell in a Cell match, I'm hanging on to that cable that, you know, where the cell is lowered from and raised from. I'm hanging on to that thing for dear life. I mean, even when I'm just up there by myself, I was so petrified. But the flip side of that is, if I caught a beating inside the cell, it's not that memorable. Mm-hmm. But for Punk to climb up that cell with that stick and just wear me out on top of the cell, that's something memorable. That gives a babyface something that he can brag about. The people go, man, he climbed up that cell and he whipped Heyman's ass. And the one thing that I wanted to do was, if I'm going to take a beating, let it be a beating. Let it be a legitimate beating, you know, because so then the next time it's advertised, hey, Heyman's going to get his ass whipped, people are going to pay to see it. Mm-hmm. And plus, you know, again, this goes back to the Bruno era, you know, babyface has to live up to his promises. And all that I did to Punk, I busted him open at Money in the Bank. I cost him his chance at the WWE Championship. I double-crossed him when I swore on my children I wasn't going to do it. You know, I had to take a beating from him. And once he promised that he's going to deliver that beating to me, it couldn't be pretty. It couldn't be pretty. It couldn't be light. It couldn't be something that he was holding back on. He had to take that stick and, you know, do to me what Sandman used to do to people. Mm-hmm. It just had to be butt ugly.
Brilliant. It's like Michael Hayes said, can't get half pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
gooseberry pie,
gooseberry stew, gooseberry salad.
And it's interesting too. Michael Hayes. You know,
why don't you jump off the Tron and land on your feet?
Well, you never even took a bump, Hayes. Quit telling me to jump like 15 feet and almost die. Hayes would always come up with these ridiculous high spots that no one would ever do, and he wouldn't even hardly take bumps. So that's why it's like really tough. But standing on top of that.
I'll have you know, in my early days, I took a lot of bumps.
Yeah.
Just none of them in the ring.
One up my nose.
See, I didn't go there.
Well,
see,
but I did.
And I got to see him on Mondays. And I'm sure he's going to listen to this podcast.
He'll tell you. Man, he'll tell you about it.
Marry me.
We're putting him over in his mind.
I know.
Ain't nobody partied like the Freebirds did. When you're standing on top of that cell, I mean.
What just dude, happened there?
This is a conversation. This is you're only going to get this on Talk is Jericho with
the
Edge, Heyman, and Jericho.
Pot of Thunder.
The Pot of Thunder. And rock and roll. When you're standing on top of that cell.
I can't sing at all. Sorry.
That's. Did you ever have a Hell in a Cell?
Yes.
Standing on top of the cell is one of the scariest things because not only have you have to climb up there, and I remember on the ground looking up, like, that's not so bad. When you get up there looking down,
awful.
It's brutal. And that's why Mick Foley is the craziest man I've ever met to take that bump he took. Because when you're standing up there, like you said, I didn't want to go near the edge. And I took a pedigree on top of the cage, and you know, I got hit with a barbed wire baseball bat and all that stuff. That's fine, but taking a backdrop and a pedigree because your arms are hooked. And I'm looking at this cage. If it breaks, I'm going straight down to the mat.
You're screwed, dude.
Screwed, blued, and tattooed. Eh? Same with you. I mean, you're getting hit with the. I mean, you're walking on that cage, and it's like, man, that is the scariest match to be in as a Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
Well, and they upped the height of it too. It got taller.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really.
And I remember Taker and I had ours, and I wanted to go up there.
But we got the we're PG now yeah. right before our match, like 3 hours before. And I went, what? Now we're PG?
Yeah.
Right before Hell in a Cell? Okay. And because I wanted to take a tombstone on top of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ew.
Man. There's a reason I've had two neck surgeries.
You must have been giddy Edge that day, man. I'm telling you. We're here with Edge, my special co-host for the day, and Paul Heyman. Paul E. Dangerously. Coming up, we'll get into the CM Punk story, his departure, and whether or not Paulie thinks he'll return to the WWE. But first, got to show some appreciation to my man, Diamond Dallas Page, and his DDP yoga. You know I do it just about every day, and I have for years. But hey, you don't have to be a pro athlete to do DDP yoga. This workout program is great for people of all ages and all fitness levels. This is a cardio workout. It improves your strength and flexibility. It's easy on the joints. Low impact, people! Yeah! And listen, because you listen to my show, you can get a great deal on the DDP Yoga Max Pack. 15 workouts. You get a nutrition guide, recipes, and a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga. You gotta have it. And you can even download the MP3s so you can work out wherever and whenever you want. DDP is making it as easy as possible for you to get in shape and stay in shape. That's the important thing. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you guys. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho, but this offer is not going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho, and you can also find this great deal by going to podcastone.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Check it out. You won't regret it.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, we're back with Edge and Paul Heyman. Paul, let me ask you this. You work closely with CM Punk, right? Did you have any idea that he was going to leave, that he was going to disappear, quit the company? Did he tell you about it? Did he reference it at all? Or did you know just from knowing Punk?
I think on the day that it happened, it was very spontaneous. Mm-hmm. I think it was a year in the building. Mm-hmm. And any day in that year, had he decided to walk, would not have surprised me. Mm-hmm. He was unhappy. Mm-hmm. He had enough. He couldn't take it anymore. And it wasn't a slow build. It was, a year before he walked, these were daily conversations of, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to take this. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. I don't know how much longer I can take this. I don't know how much longer it's going to be till I just decide to go home. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised it lasted that long.
Surprised he was able to last that long before he left?
I was surprised based on how volatile and how intense his desire was to walk mm-hmm. a year prior. Mm-hmm. And then not that it's not like it subsided. I mean, every day with him was an exercise in him finding the balance to simply continue on and find the passion that he needed to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened was he walked in the day after the Royal Rumble and he couldn't find that passion. He couldn't convince himself or persuade himself, okay, whether I'm happy or not, this is about the performance. It's about my legacy. It's about I take pride in what I do. And whether I'm happy or unhappy, when I go out there, I want to be the best CM Punk that I possibly can be. And I think somewhere during that day, he couldn't find that. Mm-hmm. And he realized, I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have the passion to do it. And he didn't want to be a shell of himself. He didn't want to just coast. He didn't want to just be collecting a paycheck. He couldn't find the passion to be the best that he could be. And to him, that was it. It was time to go home.
Did you think it was going to last? Did you know that it would be, I mean, as we speak right now, he hasn't come back. I mean, people were constantly saying, okay, he's going to come back this date. Now he's going to come back in Chicago. Now he's going to come back at WrestleMania. And he never did. Did you think he was that convicted in his beliefs that he would not come back?
I was always of the opinion that once he pulled that trigger, it would be a very long time before he would ever be ready to come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I from personal experience, I can tell you that. I mean, when I pulled the trigger back in December 2006, I was thoroughly convinced in my head I was done. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, done, like finished. You know, wouldn't come back for a special appearance, wouldn't come back for, you know, one single. Oh, come back for one thing on Raw and Wave, you know. Hey, want to do the Hall of Fame? I mean, nothing. I wanted out. I wanted to say I walked and I never turned back around and never looked back and never came back, not even for one appearance, not for one smile, one frown, one insult, one compliment, nothing. And it took me 5.5 years to even consider okay, you know what? Maybe these are the right circumstances. Maybe this is the right guy. Maybe this is the right time. Maybe this is the right deal. Hey, take, you know what? Maybe it will work. Maybe I will be passionate about it. Maybe I will find a new way to approach this. You know what? I'm going to do this. It took me 5.5 years to find that inside me.
And that makes sense because it's a job that is so all-consuming. I mean, to every aspect, emotional, physical, just everything. Mm-hmm. To decompress from that, it can't happen in 2 weeks. If you ever really, truly want to try and recharge those batteries, I mean, it might be for good. It might be 5.5 years. Who knows how long it is?
Well, I went through it too. I mean, I left in 05 for 2.5 years. And I wasn't up to snuff in my head. Ideas that usually pop in my head easily were not coming. I felt like I was being taken for granted by the company. I wasn't doing anything of any merit. I was just basically falling down the card. And before I left, actually, Vince had a meeting with me where I know they were going to try and cut my contract. And I said, before you guys even get into it, I'm gone. I'm leaving. Because my contract was up and I know they're going to try and give me a reduction. And so even in the company's eyes, I was going down. I had to leave, and it took me 2.5 years to come back. And, you know, I can see where Punk would get like that. I mean, and I know how he gets in his head when he doesn't care. He doesn't care what anyone thinks. He doesn't care about anybody's opinion. I remember we had we were working in like Amarillo, Texas.
Abilene.
And it was the day, 2010, when Canada and the U.S. were having the gold medal hockey game. And Adam and I were flipping out, and we found a production bus to watch the game. And it was me and Punk versus Morrison and Edge. And we were like, listen, we've worked 100 times before. You know, it's 2,000 people out there. Let's just call it in the ring. Cool, fine, and dandy. We watched the game. Canada scored in overtime. Go Canada. Right as my ring music was playing. It's like, yes, they scored. They had the good sense to score before we had to go. And I ran to the ring, and we had our match. And Punk starts. And he continues. And he continues. And he continues. And it took me about 5 minutes to realize he's not going to tag me in. And he worked the whole match himself as I stood on the apron side. And I was like, you son of a bitch. And I went on the floor. I grabbed popcorn. And some guy threw a can at the back of my head, which made me even madder. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Afterwards, I said, I want to see all four of us in the trainer's room. And I lit into him like, what are you doing? He's like, you're so unprofessional because you guys watched the hockey game. I'm like, dude, you're unprofessional for not tagging me in. People might have paid money to see me today, and you robbed that from them. And we got in a big argument, and I was thinking, like, the balls, like the audacity of this dude.
Well, it was interesting because I said to him, listen, between the two of us, we've been doing this 40 years.
Yeah.
We can do it out there. And I get where
we don't need to explain ourselves to you. I remember you said that.
And I said, I get where you're coming from because I've been there. But you're just barking up the wrong tree, and you're going to see exactly where I am in a few years because you are me. And sure enough, he's tweeting the Stanley Cup Finals from a pay-per-view. And I went, yep, that's what I thought.
Now, what do you mean you are me? What do you mean by that?
We have very similar mentalities.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Like when it comes, when enough's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also to stand up when you do think something.
Right.
And to try and, you know, I want to be a leader here. And part of being a leader is standing up for yourself. And if you don't agree with something, then saying it and all of those things.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing, and sometimes I did bark up the wrong tree. And I was told, that's not the way to do it. You know what? I think you're right in hindsight. But sometimes it took hindsight.
Well, I mean, another thing is, too, is like I think when you were I mean, you came into the company, long hair, you know, good-looking guy, and you were – there was a
– Debatable.
Well, there was a target on your head. For me, too, I came in the company, target on my back. Punk target on your back. Even for you, Paul, because you came in as the enemy because you were an ECW guy, target on your back. And you have to have some attitude behind you that comes across as arrogance. But to make it in the WWE, you have to have it. I said it on Steve Austin's DVD. You have to be a little bit of an asshole to really make it in the WWE, you know, and make it in wrestling. And when Punk did that, I was so mad at him. But in, deep down inside, I was like, you know, I respect the fact that you stood up for your convictions. Yep. You're wrong, I got it. Yeah. You know, and I think that's why when he left, I was like, I don't think people are going to, I don't think he's going to come back as quickly as people think
he
is.
No. You know, Austin really hit it on the head. He calls it withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went home. It took me about 2-3 years to go through that withdrawal, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think Punk is experiencing withdrawal. Mm-hmm. You know, and for a straight edge guy that's never had.
This is his addiction.
Any sort of withdrawal. Yeah. This was his addiction. And I actually think in watching just how intense his dislike for it all was becoming, I actually think he was going through the withdrawal while he was still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt. And mine was due to injury, but I haven't watched since I retired.
Really?
I'll catch something here and there, but I'm in my withdrawal still, and it's 3 years later.
Hmm. Does it hurt to watch?
I think there's part of that. I think it's like, well, I can't do that. And if I can't do that, that's what I enjoyed most about it. I hated the travel. I didn't like most of the people that I worked with. And, you know, okay, so then...
And by the way, I'm sorry.
So there was a few. But the enjoyable part was performing. Well, I can't do that. And I don't want to be one of those guys that watches and go, if they had done that there, I don't want to be that guy. So I just needed to step away and really step into a different, you know, part of life. And especially now being a father, it's like, I ain't going to sweat two guys jumping around in tights, you know?
It's like the Martin Scorsese commercial for American Express where he goes in with the film and they didn't develop it right. Hello, Timmy, Uncle Marty, how'd you like to have your 12th birthday again? You know? And it's, you know, it's like you watch it from a director's standpoint, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, they should have shot this camera this way. And if he delivered that line this way, he'd have so much more. I can understand that.
Well, and it really is. Like, you can't go back to watching as just a pure fan. You can't go back to that, oh my God, Hogan just slammed him.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. It's like, you know, Santa is not real now. Mm-hmm. So it's tough when you're pulled back out of the industry to try and get that back. It doesn't come back.
I know for me, like this year, I don't watch a lot, but I always follow along what's going on and we'll watch things that are interesting to me, like you said. But this year, like I had some talks about maybe doing something at WrestleMania and nothing really, it just didn't work out, like no issues or problems. So watching WrestleMania was hard for me this year because it's like I wanted to be there. But the other side of the coin is if I just would have been like in the Battle Royal, I would have been so pissed off and furious anyways. It's like if there wasn't a place for me, I didn't want to do it. But watching it, it was a little bit like, oh, like this is WrestleMania, man. I should be there.
And I think that's part of it. And I think that's probably why. It's just easier not to.
Yeah.
And especially because I can't.
Yeah, it does kind of hurt. Right, exactly. Paul, let me ask you this. Do you ever miss ECW?
No.
And why is that?
Because it was a product of its time. And I don't do you have a good time on your prom night in high school?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I'm sure both of you probably got laid.
I did, actually. I picked the wrong date.
I just,
did
you know.
Did you get laid on your prom?
I plead the fifth.
His face got red. He totally did, man. He totally did. Whoever you are that went to Edge with prom, thanks for putting out.
I had a great time my prom night. Mm-hmm. And at the time, one of the best evenings of my life. And I'm happy that it happened, and I'm happy that I went, and I'm happy that I scored. And I don't want to relive that night because I did it, and that was it.
So we're not going to see you at a prom anytime soon?
Hanging around the parking lot?
Only if I'm double dating with Jerry Lawler. So,
yeah, boy!
I got to see him Mondays, too.
He won't listen to this, trust me. We were talking about Batman, maybe.
So... I never look back. Like, I never watch old footage.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Ever.
Really?
ever. My kids do, mm-hmm. and they'll come to me and say, what's the story behind this? And I end up having to tell them the story. But no, I never look back. I can't live my life that mm-hmm. way. There's so much more that I want to do, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be held back by just spending any time reminiscing, mm-hmm. yeah. you know? ECW was great. It was 7.5 years, and I can sit there and make the case that was the greatest time of my life. I can make the case that this is the greatest time of my life. If I sit here and reminisce about the time I had at Studio 54, and you talk about decadence and debauchery and Caligula, my God, I mean, you know, it was...
Did you actually go to Studio 54?
I worked at Studio
54. Did you really?
Oh, yeah, I was
not kidding me.
This
no.
just took a new direction.
Oh, yeah, see, this is why we don't have questions.
Oh, no.
So you worked at Studio 54?
Yeah, I was 19 years... In March 1985...
Wow.
I was doing college radio... in New York, and I was editing 3 wrestling magazines that were on the newsstand, and I was traveling all over the country and going to Montreal, you know, the Frank Valois promotion that Pat Patterson had an interest in, and I was going to Georgia to the Omni events. I was going to Florida to those events. I was going to some Jim Crockett shows. I used to sneak in, and Dusty just told this story. I used to sneak in to the production meetings that Jim Crockett Promotions would have so I could learn how Dusty put together television shows. I was doing play-by-play because remember 1985, you know, was a rapid expansion of cable, and we were going into the first WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So
rapid expansion of wrestling too.
Right. Yeah. Oh, huge. So there were, you know, forget about the 34 territories, there were about 25 to 30 local independent promotions in the Northeast all having local cable television shows. There was, like, you know, the Samoans had their own Trans World Wrestling Federation. They had TV in New Haven up through Hartford. There was the Can-Am Wrestling Federation, which was owned by a guy named A.W. Constantini and mm-hmm. Tom something or another. And Tom's probably listening, and I'm sorry I don't remember your name, but I don't remember your name. And but Tom, my man Tom.
Tom boy.
Yo, Tom. And Tom. Here's a shout-out to you, Tom.
You know who you are.
So they had actually – cable access and cable television from Port Chester, New York, up through New Haven. There was Bob Raskin, who was using Sergeant Slaughter a lot, and he had a lot of New Jersey and into Pennsylvania. That was booked by D.C. Drake and D.C. Drake and Damian Kane.
They were always in a magazine called Wrestling Eye.
Wrestling
Carmine
Eye.
Carmine Dispirito. Wow.
Right.
Remember that
who
one?
Was run by Mike Bello, who passed away. And then Carmine Dispirito from New Jersey took it over.
He might have passed away, too.
Carmine?
I think so.
No, I think he's still living in Milwaukee.
Sorry, Carmine. Hope you're having a great life. We love you.
Not that we miss you, anyway. But
yeah, Carmine.
Let's shout out to Carmine. Here's the Carmine.
Carmine, Tom, Chad from Hilton. Saying hi to everybody.
I was doing play-by-play and horrible at it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But because I was getting them exposure in all these newsstand wrestling magazines, and I could also do a lot of their souvenir programs, I ended up doing a lot of their play-by-play, and I was learning how to write television at the same time as well. So I'm doing like 10 different jobs. I'm a photographer, I'm an editor, I'm a publisher.
So you're learning a little bit about everything about the business.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sneaking in production meetings with mm-hmm. Dusty. I'm doing college radio, and there was a big charity event at Studio 54, and I brought Pro Wrestling USA was a combination of Jim Crockett and Vern Gagne. It was originally Crockett, Gagne, and Jerry Jarrett. Jerry Jarrett said, I ain't doing none of this. Y'all gonna take too much of my money. So Jarrett got out, and it was Crockett. And Vern, and they ran a bunch of shows, and they ran an extended tour of the Northeast, all these shows in New Jersey and in Staten Island, New York. They couldn't get into Manhattan yet. So Jimmy Garvin was a good friend of mine when I was a kid. And I said, listen, why don't we go to this charity event at Studio 54? I'll take all these pictures of you at the world's most famous nightclub. And we went there, and I was 19 years old at the time. And the house photographer for Studio 54, who was a protege of Ron Galella, who was the famous paparazzo who used to stalk Jackie Onassis, and she had restraining orders on him and everything else. And this guy was smashed. He was drunk out of his mind. And he started throwing vodka bottles at the bartenders, and they fired him on the spot, and they threw him out the back door. And I was talking to the general manager of Studio 54, and I said, hey, wasn't that your house photographer? He says, yeah, yes, it was. I said, you know, I could do that job. He goes, you can? Oh, yeah, of course I can. Yeah, I've been house photographer at a lot of different nightclubs here in New York. You know, you have? Oh, yeah, I don't want to run down names, give you my resume. But listen, if you want me, I can do it.
And what would a house photographer do? Just take pictures of people in the club?
Yeah,
and,
that's it. Yeah, celebrities.
For the newsletter, whatever it was back then.
You know, coordinate with the management if they needed publicity photos sent out.
Gotcha.
You're the house photographer. Whatever the house needs, you photograph. And I was like, wow, 19 years old, and, you know, I can run this joint, because it was pretty wild back then, and, you know, and everybody was so high and messed up and, you know, and drunk, and a lot further than drunk, that I was like, man, I'm the only sober guy in this joint. I can do whatever I want to do, you know? And it was still a very popular nightclub back then, so I got hired that night to be the house photographer. And a couple of weeks later, and I'll say this now because the statute of limitations has run out for him, and plus it's a true story, and he was so high in the 80s, he probably doesn't remember it. Those who tell you they remember being at Studio 54
weren't there.
Weren't really there. So, Boy George shows up.
Okay.
With his boyfriend, Marilyn, who was this,
another kind of a British singer.
Yeah, and who ended up, they ended up finding out that he was in a great relationship, I think, and I'll get sued for this one. Or you will, it's your podcast.
Yeah, I'll take it.
He was in a relationship years later with Gavin Rossdale, I believe.
Wow.
You know, whether Gavin...
The cat who's married to...
Gwen Stefani.
Gwen Stefani.
So he's bisexual?
He's
just a girl.
Get it?
He's just no a doubt. Beard.
He doesn't just like Bush.
So many bad puns.
So George shows up with Marilyn, and they go up to the VIP room, and George is supposed to do an impromptu concert, which of course has been leaked to all the music press. So all the music press from New York is there at studio to see George do this impromptu concert. And who do you make friends with when you're going to work at a nightclub? You make friends with all the security, because that's how you get in.
That's your ticket, yeah.
That's your ticket. And if you want to, you see, a really hot girl in line with her boyfriend, and you say, hey, let her in, leave him out. You know, I mean, hey, you got to work the gimmick. You know, so I made friends with all the security, and one of the security guards comes and grabs me because I'm really the only one, who had his eye on the ball back then because everybody else was too busy partying. Right. And he says, hey, man, which was my name. And he says,
hey, man.
Broom. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here through Thursday. Please try the veal.
It's been a long day.
And he says, hey, George is upstairs in the VIP room, and he's on the floor frothing at the mouth. I don't think this is a good thing. So I come upstairs, and George had taken way too much of what later became in vogue here in the United States and was a real underground London thing back then, was a primitive form of ecstasy. And George was really in bad shape. And there were a lot of different people that were frequent guests at Studio 54 that I had already come to know, and one of them was a doctor, and he ran out to his car and he got his medical bag like Burt Lancaster in Field of Dreams. I'll take care of this.
I'm envisioning Jack Elam in Cannibal Run. I'm the doctor around here, the crazy eyed guy. Where is he?
I gotta give her a shot. JJ.
Hey, you thought Morris Day and Jerome was an obscure call? How about Jack Elam?
Oh.
Anybody knows Jack Elam on this show.
So, So he gives George a couple of shots of B12, and we send out this security guy across the street. I nicknamed this guy Guido Foch because he used to just stand there at the back door and comb his hair all night long. And, you know, and he was like, hey Guido, you know, and his name wasn't Guido. In fact, it wasn't even Italian, but, you know, hey, Guido, how you doing? He goes, hey, yo, how you doing? You know what I'm saying? Hey, yo, I got me my new Camaro, you know, and I leave the T-tops off, but the windows up so it don't mess up my hair. You know, I mean, you know, if they ever find out the situation's illegitimate father was Guido Foch, it all makes sense to me now. So Guido runs across the street, and he gets a bunch of coffee, and we pour it down George's throat, and we just know we've got to sneak him out of there without the media seeing him. So we black out the nightclub, and we hit the fog machines way too strong, and literally we prop up George on stage, and we hit a live track of him at this London nightclub that he had done, and he lip syncs one song, and we sneak him out the back door, and we get George and Marilyn by the back door with sunglasses, and the back door at studio had the very same type of glass door with the Studio 54 logo on it that the front door had. So we prop George up, and we take pictures of him and Marilyn by the back door, and we got him into a limo and got him the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. And I went back to my first apartment in New York City, was on the Upper West Side, and I had a photo lab there. I developed the pictures, and I had taken it from enough different angles that it looks like three different photographers had taken the pictures. Mm-hmm. Took it from the right, took it from the center, took it from the left. So I took one picture down to the Daily News, one picture down to the New York Post, one picture down to Newsday or the Village Voice. I don't really remember which one it was. And they all ended up publishing it on a different day, saying, hey, Boy George walks into Studio 54, and what a great concert it was. And everybody was real happy with it. And, you know, and, oh, we heard this crazy story about they hit the fog machine too high, yeah, yeah, and blah, 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 blah. But we got great publicity out of it. So at the time, Studio was paying way too much money for outside public relations, and they had moved their public relations just then in-house, and their PR guy was terrible. They hated the guy. Mm-hmm. And they said, how did you get this in the newspapers? How did you get this item on the page six? How did you get this item into the gossip column on the Daily News? This was really good of you. And I said, well, I just brought it down, and I said they could use it. Just no photo credit. And I didn't want to get paid for it. And, of course, I was hoping that they would come to me with something like this. So they said, well, would you like to do in-house publicity? And I said, yes, if I could have an office. And the office at Studio 54 was almost like the Carlito's Way office, you know? It's like you can look down at the nightclub, and it was just badass. It was like, man, you can get laid in these offices, you know? If you can't get laid in these offices, yeah, you're doing something really, really, really wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and I was tired of taking girls down to the basement, too. So, because everybody knew who was going, you know, they had a guy at the door at the basement, so he knew all your business. If yeah, you have your own office, you got to have a little bit of privacy there. So the next thing I know, I'm the in-house publicist at Studio 54 as
wow,
well.
I don't think anybody's ever heard that story before, man. That's a Talk is Jericho exclusive right here on the 50th episode. I did not know that, but that's where we're going to pick things up on Friday, because we got to know how you went from Studio 54 to promoting and hosting wrestling events. And of course, we haven't even started talking about ECW yet. So Paul Heyman and my super special co-host Edge will return with me on Friday for part two of this incredible conversation. TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states, but in the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar certified dealer network. That's amazing. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never, ever overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Is your computer running slow? Well, MyCleanPC.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now, you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating, right? I know. Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow your computer down. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up in your computer. MyCleanPC can help. First, go to MyCleanPC.com, and in minutes you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then, simply activate MyCleanPC software to clean out the junk, internet clutter, and even remove viruses as well. MyCleanPC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With MyCleanPC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to MyCleanPC.com and get a free computer diagnosis. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to MyCleanPC.com today and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's MyCleanPC.com. Go there now.
Talk is Jericho.
Thanks to Edge and Paul Heyman for joining me. Look forward to part two on Friday. And thanks for all of you for listening. And thanks for all of you for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links. Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and everybody's going Amazon! Amazon USA! I could just hear Edge right now. Brutal! Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done. You're helping me out in the process. Listen, have you pre-ordered? Do you want to start a war yet? Fozzy's new record, July 22nd, it comes out. If you haven't pre-ordered it, go to the Talk is Jericho banner and go to Amazon and pre-order the record now. If you haven't heard any of the tunes, this one's called One Crazed Anarchist from Do You Want to Start a War, available on July 22nd. Crank it up. Let's check it out now.
We'll be right back. anarchist. One crazy 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 anarchist.
All right, what'd you think, people? Hit me up at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter. Let me know what you think of the new Fozzy. You can also go to at Fozzy Rock or at I Am Jericho. Also hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and let me know what your favorite episode of the first 50 of Talk is Jericho were and are. Thank you so much for joining me. We're just getting started. This is the beginning of a revolution, guys. You're a part of it. I'm a part of it. We're all in this together. And I thank you for schwazing my podcast when there's so many other podcasts you can schwaz from. We'll be back on Friday with more Edge and Paul Heyman. And I'll be back week in and week out after and after and after and after that, as long as you stick with me and tell your friends about us. So stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. See you Friday for part two of my conversation with Edge and Paul Heyman. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. Happy 50th anniversary, yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to Geico, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
Five seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the ninth floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about four deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.